Good morning and welcome to Talking of Books. I'm John MacDonald, and fellow Mac in the opposite corner this morning, Penny McKenzie.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
We're doing great, and we have an action-packed show lined up for you today. 6, 8 books, Penny. We've got, I don't know if you've counted them all.
Yeah, I have, and I have to say, there's just no ways that I would have been able to read them all, and I think you're in the same position. So
likewise.
We're very lucky that we've got guests in the studio
who have done... We have a string of guest reviewers today. Author interviews in the studio. We've got pre-recorded author interviews. So from now till 1 o'clock, we'll be keeping you fully occupied with the news from the LitFest. As all our books today, all our authors today are prominently featured at the LitFest. So Penny, maybe you can tell our listeners more about that before we get into the today's program proper.
What we're doing today is we're featuring sort of fiction. We've got, leading up to the festival, we're going to be having lots of shows about the festival, but today's one is fiction. That's what we're doing today, a little variety of different languages as well, not just English is going to be covered today in our show. We've got how many days left? I think we've got 2 or 3 days left until members of the public can buy tickets. So whoever has been out there using our wish list, so you can go onto the website, which is www.the usual HTTP/// and it's emiratelitfest.com. You can go on there, you can click on to our program, and there's a wish list section where you can choose all the things that you want to buy, and then in a couple of days you can actually go and press a button and it'll all go through, pay your money and come to the festival.
Well, sounds great. Making life easy for everybody out there who wants to enjoy what the festival has to offer.
Indeed it does. That's exactly what it does. And the other nice thing about this is that with the show that we've got today, once we've spoken to our reviewers and obviously some of our authors, you can actually go onto the website and see what you want to watch of that particular person and what other things they're doing. Because the authors don't all just do one thing. They do a few things. They do some panels as well as individual sessions. And I think this year our panels are particularly good. We've had a very creative programming team this year who have put together some interesting authors for us to enjoy. I think we can also start sort of seeing who we've got in the studio with us, don't you think, John?
I think it's time we introduced them. Yes, they're sitting here looking expectantly, say, are we ever going to be acknowledged that we're here? Or are the two of you just going to rabbit on for the entire first hour?
So we've got joining us at the moment, which is actually a festival author, April Hardy. Welcome, April.
Good morning. I'm delighted to be here.
It's great to have an author actually in the studio with us. We usually have them on the phone, so it's nice to have somebody sitting here that we can talk to without having our headphones on, feeling as though we're in a little bit of a bubble, so that's great. We've also got in the studio with us a sort of regular, Mark. You've been, how many times, I shudder to think how many times you've been on the show. I couldn't remember if I tried.
No, I can't. I haven't ever sort of
counted it up.
Put notches on my bedpost or anything like that, but good to be back. And
so Mark Lemon, who's sitting on my right, and then across the studio from me, we've got I'm going to say April Huddingham, but it isn't. It's Tara Mallon, who's been on the show a few times. In fact, we've been on the show, I think, twice together.
Yeah. This is my third time, actually, so it's very exciting.
It is great.
So Penny, if Mark is sitting on oh yes, he is sitting on your right.
On my right.
I was thinking that you had that female not knowing left from right.
Well, I do, actually, and I'm not even going to pretend that I don't, and I'm not going to even act as though I'm a little bit tiny offended, because I can get lost in a straight line, and I'm not going to pretend that I can't. So I do have a little trick that I know whether it's my left or my right. It's shameful, isn't it?
But you are outvoted by females here, John, so be careful.
Oh, we are. We are outnumbered, indeed, especially with Esther Kabugi, our producer, as well, in the same category. So Esther, who really has got the whip hand on us. We have to show be duly circumspect in the company, Mark.
Yeah, step lightly, guys. Step lightly. Otherwise, the claws will be coming out and we'll be eating you up. We really will. We have some romance, don't we, this morning in our book reviews?
We do.
We have? Yes, we do, because April is our queen of romance, aren't you, in your writing?
Well, thank you very much.
You have to agree with me. I mean, you've managed to get a book deal of, well, how many books is it now that on your book deal?
Three.
That's pretty good going. Yeah.
I must say, when I got the call from Accent Press, I was so excited I misheard the person on the other end of the line, and I thought it was a two-book deal. And so it wasn't until I actually got the contract that I realised it was three, and I thought they'd put the wrong number in. So I had to email them back and say, "You've put three." And they emailed me back again and said, "Yes, it's a three-book deal."
Were you not listening?
Yes!
And has it been challenging meeting that sort of deadline and getting all three done?
Oh, gosh. When I sent the books to Accent Press, one was completely written, one was half written, and one was only a third of the way through. And the one that was only a third of the way through, Sitting Pretty, was the one they wanted to publish first.
Which is the one that we're reviewing today and that we've all read, which we've all absolutely found delightful. Now, there's a little thing about this, because the books that you've written are all set in a fictional place, aren't they?
That's right. They're all set in the New Forest, which is where I come from. They're all in fictional villages dotted around a town called Wintertown, a fictional town in the New Forest. But they're slotted in between real places. So it's nice that the characters can sort of go out and visit Southampton or Winchester or Lymington or go to the Isle of Wight. But the actual villages they're from are fictional.
And you told me that you've actually drawn a little map of them. So you've got an idea of where everything is.
It's the most organised thing I've done. Otherwise, everything has been complete chaos. Suddenly having to do two books a year, my writing's been absolutely crazy. But the most organised thing I've done is make this map. I've got Wintertown in the centre of it, and I've got these villages all going off with the names of the characters and who lives where and what shops are where, and everything's in different colours for each book. And it's keeping me on the right track. Otherwise, you could have somebody getting up in the morning in Netley Mallow and going to bed at night in Netley Magna.
And what I would like to know is there ever going to be a chance of us seeing this little map that you've done? Is it going to be anywhere? Are you going to put it on your blog? Are we going to get to see that? No pressure. I'm just saying.
Could well do. Yes.
because the three books, once they've all been released, because we've got what we're reviewing at the moment, which is Sitting Pretty, and then the one that we've got, one that is going to be sort of launched at the festival, isn't it?
We're hoping so, yes. It looks like it's going to be here in time. That's called Kind Hearts and Coriander.
And then, okay, so that's two out. I think that once you start building up a really big fan base, they're going to want a little bit more from you. I think you're going to have to brush up your creative skills when it comes to drawing and drafting and give us a map.
I think I might have to have some help with that. It's all a bit straight lines and squiggles the way I've done it.
Did you fall in love with the characters as you were writing them?
Oh, I did. Particularly the cat. I mean, Talisker, the cat. In fact, I've had so many people say to me, "Oh, we love Talisker. We'd love to hear more about what happens to him next." So one of the books I'm working on at the moment is a sequel to Sitting Pretty.
Ah.
Just purely because so many people have loved Talisker.
How did he get his name?
well,
of course. From the whiskey, yes. It is his owner's favourite drink.
Oh, good stuff. That's... The only one that's produced in my home island, the island where I was born.
Mm. Just going back to Sitting Pretty, what made you decide that she was going to be a pet sitter? What was the thinking behind that?
The inspiration for that was the very first time my husband and I went away and there weren't any friends or family around to feed our cat. We've got a rather elderly cat, and there's always been somebody around whenever we've gone away. But a few Christmases ago, we went to Bangkok, and, excuse me, all our friends were all going away for Christmas as well, and we suddenly had nobody to look after her. And my husband said, "Oh, let's use one of these pet sitting agencies." And I was very nervous of giving the key to our apartment to a complete stranger. And my mind just sort of went into overdrive at all the things that could go wrong. You hear all these sort of horror stories of estate agents back in the UK who use the homes they're selling for nefarious purposes. And so my mind went into overdrive thinking, well, this could happen or this could happen. Of course, none of these things happened, I hasten to
add. Well, as far as you know.
It was a very respectable agency.
We thought we have to take a quick break, but we'll be back in a couple of minutes with Sitting Pretty, so stay tuned.
From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye, 103.8. Now, back to the team.
It's Saturday morning, the time is 10:20, and you're in the studio listening to Talking of Books. I'm joined in the studio by my host, John MacDonald. We've got Esther, who is our keeping everybody in control producer, and we've got guest reviewers today in the first hour, Tara Mallon and Mark Lemon, and we're joined by author April Harding, and we're talking April Hardy, and we're talking about her book Sitting Pretty. It's a delightful book set in a part of England which many of you might be familiar with. It's well known for its ponies, John, you told me that there's horses set around that come from that part of England, is that right?
This is a build-up to the quiz question, isn't it?
It is. I'm slowly giving little bits and hints here. So if you want to win two tickets to an author's session at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, all you have to do is SMS into 4001 and tell us what part of England is Sitting Pretty set in. What part of England is Sitting Pretty set in? It's a fictional town, which we're not looking for the name of, but we do want to know what part of England. And if you know the answer to that, SMS 4001. Now, a little bit more about your book, which has been, how would you describe it? I would say that it was a sort of romantic sort of mystery.
Well, I always term it, my writing is romantic comedy.
Oh, it is comedic, yes.
It wasn't, I mean, it's not advertised on Amazon as a romantic comedy, although my second book is. I've always sort of based my writing on people like Tricia Ashley, who have a very big romantic comedy following. So that's the sort of direction I'm heading in. Hopefully that's the direction I'm going in, but that's the direction I'm heading in.
What I found actually was the character Beth was very relatable. And if we were to go like grandiose, Charles Dickens said that he got some of his stories from being a court clerk. If you were going to go every day, Beyonce said that she found some of her material from sitting in her mother's hair salon. I was just wondering, is Beth based on a friend or someone you know, or is it purely fictional?
Beth is purely fictional.
Okay.
I mean, her boyfriend, or her husband rather, is based on many Greeks I've met in the 18 years I lived in Greece, but Beth herself is fictional.
Mm. Okay, that's really cool, because she seems to be very quick thinking, and she's quite able to think on her feet, and that was one of the attributes that Henry praised in her, because obviously, I don't think, maybe the listeners don't know, she was obviously put in this situation where she's about to move to Dubai and she gets a horrible phone call from her husband, who she's married purely so that they can move to Dubai and not live in sin.
That's right.
And then he tells her that he doesn't want her to live there anymore. And I was just wondering, because there are so many stories in Dubai about this happening, or, you know, girls, and I was just wondering if you had kind of, it is purely fictional, but were you kind of drawing on other people's stories that you'd heard?
Well, I suppose I do know a lot of people who've already come here and then that's happened, but I've never met anybody who that's happened before they've actually got here.
I have to say, her husband was an absolute coward. I really didn't like him.
A cad. Is it anything autobiographical?
Cad.
I mean, we're saying, you're talking about specific experiences, and I'm not suggesting that somebody left you in the lurch, April. But in terms of the nature of the character, the style and the personality, is there anything autobiographical as opposed to from a friend's experience?
I think actually Beth has traits that I would actually quite like, because I'm not very quick thinking. So that is something I would like to be.
She was quick thinking.
Yeah. Yes.
She was quick thinking, but I have to say that her decision to do the things that she did was, I mean, really and truly, what was she thinking?
Yes.
What was so terrible about going to her mother and saying, this cad has left me, when her mother didn't like him anyway? I mean, she was very proud. That her fault was her pride, wasn't it?
Actually, I think that pride and stubbornness are a little bit autobiographical.
I'm getting a bit lost here. Now, we've heard of Sitting Pretty Cat Sitting and the name of the cat, but I'm lost. Give me a thumbnail rundown. What is the book? What's the story?
It's the story of Beth, who married her Greek boyfriend, Alex, after he was offered a job in Dubai. And on the day that they're moving to Dubai, the removal men have just gone with all their furniture and things. And she gets a phone call from Alex from the plane saying, I've changed my mind. It was all a mistake. I'm going without you.
Oh.
And she's suddenly husbandless and homeless and... oh God, what am I going to do?
And in theory, jobless as well, because she had already resigned from her job, so she had to go back, beg her job back, and she worked with quite an array of characters.
Yes, the Russian girls that she works with are actually all based on people I've known. Yes.
And yet very light-hearted and very willing to share their lives with her. Hijinks and getting up to... they're full of characters. And the owner of the pet sitting business is quite a character as well. And I kind of wondered what was going to come, whether we'll see more of her at all in any of the other books.
You may well do in the sequel to Sitting Pretty.
Uh-huh.
Have you a title for that?
Its working title is Simone Says.
She's
a character
hero,
who comes
here,
into...
Heroine, yeah.
Well, she's going to be, well, not the heroine, but a character in the sequel.
I see.
I kind of thought it was... I know you've sort of said who you found your inspiration from, but I thought it had little hints of Marianne Keynes in it.
Well, that's interesting. She's another author I enjoy reading.
Yeah, I really did. And I thought the people who enjoy her books will definitely enjoy reading this. I really do think that would be great. I actually want to tell people a little bit about some of the sessions that you're doing. So I'm just quickly pulling them up here so that I can tell people. So you're doing a session called Secret Lives and Summer Love, about contemporary women's fiction. You're doing that with Nadia Hussein and Sue Moorcroft. It sounds like that's going to be a whole heap of fun, doesn't it?
Yvette was saying she can imagine this one running over because we're none of us will stop talking.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to be the room manager. There is going to be a lot to say, and it's in English, but there will be simultaneous Arabic translation for those people who want it. And that is on, I'm just having a quick look here, when is this one on? This is taking place on the 3rd of March, Friday the 3rd of March at 4:30. So people can just quickly log on if they want to and book tickets for that. And they can listen to you talking with Nadia Hussein and Sue Moorcroft. And then the other session that I think you've got another one here that you're doing, I can't find it, but I think we'll stick with that one for the time being. Now, what happens when you get something like this and you're told, right, you're going to be doing a session called Secret Lives and Summer Love? Do you do some research on it? Do you do some planning?
Well, I must say my first reaction was, oh, I'm so excited about who I'm on with, because I know Sue Moorcroft from the Romantic Novelist Association back in UK. We've bumped into each other at a few parties and conferences, but we've never actually spent much time together, so I'm looking forward to getting to know her. And Nadia Hussein, well...
Yes.
I mean, that's just a dream, because people who've never heard of me will book to come and see her. So I benefit greatly from being in the same session as her.
I think we're going to be... Your problem is going to be keeping to the sort of... the love side of it and not go into the cooking side of it, because both of you
yes.
are both of you have a passion for cooking. So that might be another thing that you're going to have to be corralled in, aren't you?
I can see us swapping chocolate cake recipes.
Tara, can you do a little bit of a review of the book while we've got the author sitting here? No pressure.
None at all. It was a great book. I really enjoyed reading it. I read it in quite quick succession. I think it took a couple of days. It was a nice one to enjoy on the beach.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, I think an animal lover will definitely love it, because animals feature heavily. I thought it was interesting how she wasn't going to give up as soon as the husband or fiance left, and she was quite resourceful. I kind of imagine what I would do in that situation, and I think it was very, I think Beth was very kind in everything that she did, and I think you really saw her coming to terms with what happened with Alex, her husband, and then I think it was also quite freeing and great that when she did meet him in Dubai, it wasn't the expected ending that you thought. And I think she was quite independent, which I thought was good. And I also thought that through her interaction with the other characters, there was quite a lot of character development. So you could imagine she was very realistic almost. And then I think that there was a rounded ending, but I thought it left it open for a sequel. So I really enjoyed it. It was good. I would ask, though, if there are any similarities between Alex and Henry, because I felt that Beth changed for both of those characters. So I'm sure you'll agree Alex was very controlling and that Beth wouldn't go out and he stifled her. But equally, with Henry, whether it was to fit the new job, you know, she changed her appearance, you know, she changed her behavior. I thought there was both men kind of groomed her in some way.
And we'll come back to that just after this short break. I'm going to remind people of the quiz question. We would like to know what part of England is Sitting Pretty set in. We don't want to know the name of the town. We just want to know the area. And we're going to give you a little hint, which is there's ponies usually there.
From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. And today, as for the next month or more, we are focusing on the LitFest and the authors who will be appearing at the LitFest and their works. And the past half hour, we've been talking to April Hardy, author of Sitting Pretty, set in England's New Forest, and a romantic comedy. Now, April, how long did it take you to put it together?
Oh, gosh. Sitting Pretty started as a short story. And after I'd got my book deal, I signed the deal in the September. And I'd by then decided to turn it into a novel, but I'd only written a third of it. And by my contract, they wanted the completed manuscript by the end of December.
That was December when? 15 or 16?
2015.
Yeah.
So basically, the last two-thirds of it were written in 3 months.
So that could
it was quite quick.
Do you have a daily routine? Now, we always like asking authors, what is your working day?
Oh, gosh.
Jeffy Archer particularly gives us, I will do 100, 500 words by breakfast, then I have a break, and then I will do another 1,000 words, and blah, blah, blah. So do you have a
I would
a
love to say that I have a schedule like that, but I'm afraid my writing is... My working day is sort of semi-organised chaos. I'm quite slow to get started, so I generally write in the afternoon, or if my husband's out in the evening, I write in the evening as well. I'm not really a morning person, so... Nothing would get... If I wrote anything before breakfast, it would all have to be deleted because it would just be nonsense. my sort of daily word count is fairly erratic. One day I might write 500 words, the next day I might write 2,000, and then the next day 20, and then when I read them back the next day, I don't like them, so I delete them all. There's no sort of nice... steady flow
of
words.
You certainly rattled it out. If you finished the second two-thirds of the book in the 3 months, was it, from...
September to December,
The last quarter of 2015.
I think I tend to thrive on deadlines. When I think I've got all the time in the world stretching out of me, I'll fiddle about and I'll write a chapter and then edit it before I've carried on. Whereas when you've got that deadline and you know it's got to be finished by then, you haven't got time to mess about.
Yes,
you just
know.
Get it down.
I know the feeling well. unless I've got a deadline, it has to be written and produced. Oh, well, that's not needed till next week. Can wait. So what's the sort of inspiration? Usually last minute panic.
Yes, it clears the mind incredibly well.
Tara, you'd kind of like brought up the characters of the two men in her life, and you'd sort of asked a question before we went to break. Do you want to just recap on that and see, and we can?
Yeah, I thought there was quite a lot of similarities in the two characters, in that the ex-husband, you know, stifled her and wouldn't let her socialize and like things in a particular order. And then with Henry, he arranged for her to have a haircut, change her appearance, have different clothes, act in a certain way. Whether that was for her new profession or whether that was him, I was wondering whether Beth had gone from one to another.
That was all for the job, because obviously she was going to be going into all these hotels, all these very sort of high-class hotels, so she had to look the part. Henry's not perfect. I mean, he's obviously a lot better than Alex, but he brings out the best in Beth, but as we'll see in book two, he's not perfect.
Okay. I want that job, by the way. For our listeners, in Sitting Pretty, the job that she gets after she leaves her pet sitting work, which sounds absolutely delightful, is going as a mystery shopper almost to hotels and making use of all of the amenities and the facilities. Oh, I want that.
It does sound like a dream job, doesn't it?
It really does. Jetting around saying that the food isn't good enough and that the service isn't that, and using all the and having, you know, facials and massages would be rather wonderful. Was that not a little bit of a dreamy sort of I wish I could do that kind of moment?
Yes.
When you were writing?
I mean, I've spent a lot of time in hotels, but behind the scenes. So that's sort of one of those jobs you think, oh yes.
We were saying before we were on air that you've got a lot of material to work with, considering the life that you've had.
I've lived in a lot of, I mean, I grew up in the New Forest, but I've lived abroad. I've lived in a lot of different places, and I've had a lot of different jobs. I went to drama school and then, you know, assumed I was going to be the next Judi Dench, as drama students do, which obviously I wasn't. But I've had so many different jobs since then that I've got so much material, I keep writing forever.
And lived in Greece and lived in Abu Dhabi and now lived in Dubai. So we can see a whole load of books coming out of this over the years.
Yes.
You're not going to be slowing down anytime soon.
Oh, no, not at all. The ideas keep bubbling away.
And do you have a message that you want to tell to your readers, or is there any particular point that you want to get across? Because one of the books that we read for The Angel's Diet, one of the quotes is that he passionately writes about moral stories, but he rarely makes a judgment. So what do you think you were trying to tell the readers in your book?
I think Beth, I mean, she does do some crazy things, but she does them nicely and respectfully.
Mm. So she's like the lovable fool.
Yes. I mean, she's doing something that's a bit naughty, mm-hmm. but she's doing it with the best of intention, and she's doing it with treating people's property with respect.
Mm.
And I think she cares a lot about other people. Mm. I mean, she's not interested in money or anything like that. Or the fact that Henry's rich doesn't mean anything to her. It's the fact that he treats her nicely is far more important. So I think the fact that, you know, she's a good person who wants to do well for others, and it's nice that in the end good things come to her.
Mm.
I'm going to do a quick little reminder for people who've been listening. If you want to see April at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, she is on the 3rd of March at 4:30 p.m. The session that she is doing is Secret Lives and Summer Love, which is contemporary women's fiction. She's doing it with Nadia Hussein and Sue Moorcroft, and I think that promises to be a really interesting, fun, upbeat session. And I think that we will have to, you know, give you a real time out when it comes to the end and say, right, you cannot possibly carry on. And just a reminder of our quiz question on that one as well. We want to know, what area of the UK is the story Sitting Pretty set in? And we believe it's not just this book, it'll be your other books as well. Your other books will also be set in this part of the
world. That's right.
And we've given you lots of hints, so you really should be able to answer those. I'd also like to thank you very much, April, for coming in. It's been an absolute delight. I'm certainly looking forward to nipping into a session and having a listen and seeing how that goes. And I'm looking forward to seeing the next book come out. I'll definitely have a read of that.
Thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure to be here.
And I think what we also need to do is get on to the next book that we've got on the list, which is slightly different, isn't it? I haven't read it, but we do have, Tara, you've read it, haven't you? And Mark, you've read it. And I think, John, you've read the next book that we're going to talk about, which is Patrick Gale's A Place Called Winter.
No.
You haven't?
Kenny, neither of us can claim that one, but I'm sure Mark and Tara will more than compensate so for our deficiencies in that department.
I think so. So we can hand it over to Mark and Tara. You can tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, perhaps some final feedback to April, because listeners text in all the time. And two texts, one from the Dubai Feline Appreciation Society. Wonderful, April. Please keep up the good work supporting cats.
Oh.
And the other one from the Friends of Greece, which said, all men, all Greek men aren't like that.
I'm half Greek. I'll agree with him.
I hadn't realised that.
Yeah.
But A Place Called Winter, Patrick Gale. I chose it to read from the six we had, because the story sounded, the brief description sounded like to be very interesting. I thought it was an excellent book. This is an author who has written a fair number of novels and is held in quite high esteem around the literary world. But I hadn't read him before, and I really liked this book. A quick summary is it's set in Edwardian times. It starts in England, where, if it's the right phrase, a middle-class family, two brothers, the elder brother, Harry, and for supporters of Tottenham Hotspur, his name is Harry Kane. But there's no reference, there's no sort of wish to link those things. And he starts a family, has a young daughter. They live, first of all, in Herne Bay, and then subsequently back in southwest London. And he has to leave, or chooses to leave, in disgrace, really, from England because of a relationship he has, and goes to Canada. And at the time, this is early 20th century, Canadian governments and provincial governments, in this case Saskatchewan, were encouraging settlers to come out, pioneers to come out, and take on lots of land in completely desolate parts of the country, and to farm them and to break them in as farming areas. And he chooses to do this. He's been without a job. He's had a certain investment wealth for himself and his family left from his father's family, who had a trading business around horses and stable management and things of that sort. So he's had a comfortable life. He's used to going to clubs and hammams and things like that in German Street and living a sort of sybaritic life. And so suddenly he's thrown on his own physical devices and takes up something which is a life which is really quite distinct. And there's a development of his life as he's going out on ship. There were no planes at the time, or passenger planes at the time. Goes out in relative discomfort to Canada, goes across the country by train, and ends up in this sort of desolate spot. Thereafter, he goes through all sorts of hardships of weather, of environment, building his farm, building his business, really, and links with a family nearby, a brother and sister family nearby, who are doing a similar thing. The plot links into the First World War and developments where Canada as a colony was sending out its men, its young men, to support the mother country, the United Kingdom, in its war against Germany. And above all, the story is one of people, of personalities, of relationships, of links, and it's a magnificently written, I felt, sensitive, heart-rending at parts. It links in as well with a development of psychiatry and different methods, different shocks for sort of not normal behavior within, as seen at the time, within society. Very tactfully, very gently written. And I was amazed by it. I was very appreciative of it. Penny, if you remember, you and I reviewed a book some time back, which was based the Revenant.
Yep.
Michael Punk.
Are we going to bring that up?
We are going to bring it up. We disagreed quite a lot about it. I mean, one of its qualities, if you like, or one of its ingredients, was a lot of research into outback life, challenging life. And since we're coming to a point, can we develop that point afterwards? We've got a break coming up, so I'll stop now.
And we will come back after a short break. You're listening to Talking of Books.
From Agatha Christie to Jeffrey Archer, we've got it covered. Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
And welcome back to Talking of Books. I'm in the studio with John MacDonald. We've got Tara Mallon and we've got Mark Lemon with us. We have just had April Harding in the studio with us. She's left now and it was just delightful having her join us. It's always good to have an author in the studio. We have a little clip for you. We're talking about A Place Called Winter, Patrick Gale's book, and I have a little audio clip for you.
Hello, I'm Patrick Gale and I want to tell you about my new novel, A Place Called Winter. It's a big departure from my previous novels in that it's historical, it's set in the early 20th century, and most of it is not set in England. Its starting point is a mystery in my own family. My great-grandfather, Harry Kane, was banished to Canada as a young man and made to abandon his wife and his baby girl, who grew up to be my grandmother. And no one would ever tell me a convincing reason why this had happened. So what I've set out to do in the book is to make it up, basically, come up with an emotionally satisfying story that also solves the mystery. So the kind of book that's emerged, in a way, is a kind of Western, because what Harry did was to go out to the wilds of Canada and become a farmer in a place that was then completely undeveloped and uncultivated. And this was a very dangerous place.
And that was Patrick Gale talking about the book that he has just written and that we are talking about on the show, A Place Called Winter. I also had a quick listen to the audiobook for this, which he's reading, and that was really great. So if you prefer an audiobook, then I recommend that you have a listen to it. Patrick Gale is the actual narrator as well as the author on that one. And we're going to go back now to Mark, because you were telling us something before we went to break, which was a little bit interesting. You're going to carry on with that? We're talking about the Revenant and...
Revenant, yeah, I'm happy to. I thought, if you remember our discussion, I thought that book was very wooden, and the research that had gone into it was kind of... irrelevant or spoilt. It was over technical when it referred to the research, the skinning of animals, the creation of fires, the capture of animals in the wild and so on for food. I just thought that it was stolid, and we disagreed about
that. Yeah, we disagreed, because I love that. I like
here,
getting a history lesson.
Patrick Gale has gone out, he's studied Canada, he's actually gone to these places. Winter, the location of much of the novel, where the farm is being broken in, the land is being broken in, and all these risks and challenges of the wild, really.
I would interrupt you there just quickly in that, in with the Reverend, he is
Reverend,
very Reverend, sorry. Get it wrong again. He's very much the master of his own fate. He does skin the cat. He does defeat bears. I think the main character, Harry, in this is very passive. He accepts everything that happens. He forgives instantly. So let's not forget that he was showed how to maintain the land, and he was very much manipulated by the evil elks in this.
Sure, no, look, I don't disagree with that. I the point I was trying to get to, though, was a different one, which was that the use of research in novels, and we find too much, to my mind, research in novels that then throws the results of the research into you pat and says, here it is. And you don't actually get the emotional development, the character development. I thought that Patrick Gale, in this book, was deft and very sensitive in his use of this research that he'd done. And that's why that's one of the ingredients that I think, A, in contrast to that other book, and B, as a quality to emphasize here, comes through very strongly. It helps, he's very good at character development, he's very good at locational development, and yet you don't feel your nose is rubbed in lots of research and things. I thought that was a high quality
of the
book. I think you researched the location, yes, but then...
Well, and the business about going out, you know, of emigration and so on. I was struck. I've got a sort of family experience of a very similar sort of somebody who stole money, in fact was a fraudster, in a trade union in the 19th century, went out of Canadian Pacific Railway. And this business of going to Canada House and so on, you know, we see it there as this big block in Trafalgar Square, not really having much relevance now. But it was used as a kind of recruiting office for this thing. All of that, it kind of plays on strains of what you know or what you may not know. But it's done with a light touch. And that, I thought, was a literary quality. And a merit that ought to be emphasised.
I definitely think it makes it more authentic. It's his 16th novel, so I think that he is obviously very apt at writing about the surroundings and giving a greater depth of...
Yes, I mean, for me, the first novel of his I'd read, and the fact that one's accomplished at something isn't a bad thing when you're recommending and appreciating a novel. It's actually a good thing. I mean, I don't know if anybody here... or indeed listeners, are familiar with Willa Cather, for example, her Great Plains trilogy. She was a mid-20th century novelist writing in sort of the 30s. I think her first book of this about Nebraska and the Great Plains and life of the Great Plains came out in 1915 or something like that. Oh, Pioneers. My Antonia. And there's an enormous similarity between the way he uses location, uses context, but is actually able to develop these emotions, these relationships, these links between characters, the feeling of family. I was very impressed by this. I liked it very much.
Tara, you mentioned just now a little bit about the fact that he was so passive. There is a review that sort of says that, there's a very violent thing that happens to him in the book, and that it's done to calm him down, and yet the review is sort of saying that everything that he did was calm. He was this very passive, very calm person, and there was just a huge torment going on inside of him. So what he showed the world was a calm, smooth exterior, and I suspect that he probably was a hugely passive person compared to, say, you know, the Reverend, where there was a lot of action and decision making.
Maybe that was telling of the time and the accepted mode of behavior. I think what made this to me a great story in comparison to The Angels Die, which was more of a moral question, and maybe it was because this is written in the third person, or maybe because I'm so different to the character, but I find that when you read a book, the closer you are to a character, the more you like them, the more you can perceive their behavior as being likable or great. I found that I liked the overall story, but I thought it was removed. So I thought that what he did was, how he dealt with the card that he had been given was questionable. But then again,
I sort of contest some of that. I think the thing that Penny said, that perhaps he was like that. I think that's true. I think, bear in mind, this is a sort of fictionalization of a family history, as he's trying to, and he explained in that clip, he's fleshing it out and coming up with his own idea. But it sounds to me, and I think there's some bit in towards the end of the book where it's, you know, there's a historical explanation by Patrick Gale. It sounds to me as though this great-grandfather was passive. He was rather... thing. And I don't think you have to feel equivalence of type or nature or even gender with a character. I think that the skill of a great author is that you like it and you get taken in by this creation, even if you're completely different and you've got no experience. I suggested there was a a sort of reference that caused me to want to read the book from family, but no equivalence in experience. I mean, I haven't.
Mark, time
farm out
is again
in
run away with us. And,
I'm sorry.
Our first hour is up, so news time, but stay with us. We'll be back after the news with a lot more of Litfest authors and their works. In the meantime, thanks, Mark. Thanks, Tara, for joining us in our first hour. And we look forward to having you back with us and talking books very soon.